Good afternoon and welcome to today's edition of In Focus. Grant Demme joined today for our weekly health unit check-in with the Leeds, Grenville, and Lanark District Health Unit. Today, we're joined by Dr. Lena Lee and Danielle Labonte, who has returned to the show for another conversation. How are you two doing today?
Doing good, Grant.
Good, good. So it's 2024, which means it's a new year, and a lot of people like to say it's a new me, but that remains to be seen for a lot of these. But we're talking New Year's resolutions today on the show. So that often comes, you know, with the calendar flipping to January, with messaging around the resolutions focused on making changes to our health one way or another. Dr. Lee, why don't you start us off? Can you tell us about this through the lens of the health unit?
Yeah, so the beginning of a new year gives us a chance, I think, to just reflect on what we hope and expect for the coming year. I know I'm doing that. And New Year's resolutions are often parts of this. And in general, I think resolutions that are about an approach rather than avoiding specific behavior are going to be more effective and just a little bit easier to sort of maintain over the long term. So I'll give an example, something like I'll pay more attention to my mental health, or I'll eat more vegetables. Two sort of general examples would be examples of approaches. And I won't eat potato chips anymore. Might be an example of something that we would consider avoidance. So the approach style of New Year's resolutions also gives the opportunity for more grace if you slip up, some more flexibility in how you meet the resolution and hold yourself to the resolution for longer. So for example, if you say you won't eat any chips anymore, then if you eat some chips, then you've broken your New Year's resolution, and then you may be tempted to think, well, I've broken it already, so I'll just go on eating chips and forget about the resolution. But taking an approach, so in contrast, something like I'm going to eat more vegetables, means it's not an all or nothing moment. So you give yourself more grace if you slip up. And then it gives you more flexibility in how you might want to eat that. So what kind of vegetables you eat, how much you choose to eat, when or how you choose to eat them, et cetera, et cetera. So lots of flexibility is important. And of course, for some people, an all or nothing approach, it does actually work for people. So go for it if that's the thing that's going to get you. But the evidence actually says that more people have success with a general approach style resolution than an avoidance or an all or nothing type of resolution. So the other thing to consider is that New Year's resolutions are a way to maybe make progress on a lifelong behavior change rather than something that you're doing for just the year or a make or break moment. So the resolution is a way to work methodically over the course of the year towards a change or activity, rather than, you know, expecting success or full success from the get-go. Give yourself permission to get better at something instead of being perfect right from the start. And we know that exercising and eating more healthy are actually two of the most common New Year's resolutions. So that's something that we'll talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like that approach. It's sort of like a mindset switch. Instead of giving yourself an ultimatum, allow yourself some breathing room, and then with that it'll come. So it's really about developing these habits, these positive healthy habits. And Danielle, as a public health nutritionist, that this is your wheelhouse. So what in particular about changing your eating habits is a good way to approach your New Year's resolution?
Yeah. So there are times where changing our eating habits can be helpful and really improve our overall health. So for example, increasing our vegetable and fruit intake or drinking more water. However, in our society, it's often normalized to talk and think about food in a way that can lead people to having a negative relationship with it and with our bodies. So it's common for weight and food to be linked together, specifically when we think about dieting as a way to change how our bodies look. And this can lead to disordered eating and eating disorders, among other negative outcomes. So I do want to explain that disordered overeating is a term that includes a wide range of harmful eating behaviors, and this may not warrant an eating disorder diagnosis. And eating disorders are illnesses with specific and narrow criteria that healthcare practitioners would use to diagnose individuals.
Okay, and you know, you mentioned eating disorders this there as well, but I'm sure there's also, you know, some red flags to keep in mind when talking about eating habits. And what can we do to combat those to make sure we don't develop anything that's not healthy for us?
Yeah, so some red flags would be leaving out an entire food group. So thinking about vegetables and fruit, whole grains and protein foods, ignoring our hunger cues. We might see this with intermittent fasting or diets that recommend calorie restriction, villainizing certain foods. So labeling foods as good or bad, healthy or unhealthy, calling foods junk food, things like that. And if you're feeling guilt around eating certain foods, these are really all signs that something could be leading you down the wrong path. So what can we do about this? Well, we can be mindful of the red flags that I just mentioned. We can consider the language we use when we're talking about food and strive to use neutral language around food. So calling foods by their actual names instead of putting those labels on them like good or bad. Check your self-talk related to your own body image and relationship with food and avoid judging yourself based on what you eat. This can be challenging to get used to, but really the more often you're able to reflect on this, the easier it does become. It's also helpful to be aware of the mindset of the people that you surround yourself with. And, you know, are they going to support you in this process? And you might need to set some boundaries with certain individuals. So for example, some type topics might just have to be off limits, or you might delay seeing someone who you find triggering until you're in kind of a better place.
And now we've talked about food, and we mentioned sort of at the top of the show that food and exercise tend to be the one and two New Year's resolutions that people want to set. So let's talk about the physical activity and how we want to maybe ramp that up this year for just personal gain and, you know, just overall physical health. So Dr. Lee, can you share with us a little bit some tips on how to address that in a positive manner?
Yeah, so starting off, I'll just say, I think it is something that we know that most people in Ontario don't actually get enough physical activity in general. What we do caution against is linking physical activity to changing the way that our bodies look. Research shows that this can actually demotivate some people and create a negative relationship with being active. And so instead, taking a positive approach, so being active for reasons aside from how we look. And there's lots of reasons to be active. There's our mental health. There's lots of benefits for physical activity, even one moment of physical activity can actually boost mental health for that day. Stress management, especially long-term for physical activity, improves stress management, decreases stress levels, and also decreases the way that your body might react unhealthily to stress. And lots of physical health benefits as well. So blood sugar control, heart, bone, strength, flexibility, mobility, lots of physical benefits there as well. And just as a quick plug, that as a reminder, exercise recommendations for adults is 2.5 hours of moderate to vigorous physical activity each week. And evidence shows that doing this in short chunks, even something like 10 minutes at a time, is effective in improving health.
And that was going to be my next question, is how can you sort of set these goals for yourself to make sure that these are attainable? Because going from a couch potato and saying, you know, by the end of the year, I want to run a marathon or something like that, you know, that's quite a large goal. But there's ways, I imagine, to sort of break something down in a way that's manageable and palatable as we move throughout the year.
Yeah, so that's a great example of something that you would do over the course of the year with a plug that, you know, the goal isn't necessarily just to run the marathon, but the journey along the way. And so breaking your resolution down into specific components and then just really think about how you would actually incorporate it into your day-to-day. So for example, scheduling certain days of the week where you would work towards training for a marathon, specific activities, figuring out what else in your life might need to be adjusted as you make the changes. Those are important things, just practical, right? To make sure it fits with your life. One challenge with resolutions is that a year is a really long time, actually, and so it lends itself to procrastination. And this is actually in the evidence as well. So create chunks of time within a year with milestones. So for example, every month, every season, and this makes the resolution less overwhelming. So it doesn't feel like you have to go from 0 to 100, you know, like right away. It breaks it up into chunks. And then it also helps you to make goals specifically for each chunk of time so that you can reevaluate your goals and think about new strategies with every milestone that you reach. It gives you a chance to just reflect. And as well, the golden rule for setting goals in general, so people talk about SMART goals, it's important to be specific about your goals. It's important also to be realistic. So take stock of what you've achieved so far and then think about what is the realistic next goal to achieve. Set a specific time, right? So a month, even something like a week, and this will help to keep yourself accountable. And then within each goal or each milestone, break it down into bite-sized chunks so that you're not saying, you know, by the end of the month, I'm going to be able to do, you know, X amount. Well, what does that mean? So, you know, day to day, week to week, breaking it down to be an even shorter time horizon. Other things that are important and evidence-based, making it fun. So for example, using the resolution to learn a new skill or to socialize, or even the satisfaction of being able to cross something off your list. Those are moments that you can reward yourself and also incorporate it into your life, the rest of your life as well. Making it social. So again, research shows that talking with others about your goals, making joint goals. So, you know, the marathon running, you know, maybe saying with a friend, we're going to do it together, or even just regular check-ins with friends or someone in your life to say, you know, how are things going? Having someone problem solve with you, that actually helps make behavioral changes stick. And then finally, I talked about this earlier as well, but giving yourself grace. So goals are inherently about wanting to be better or make positive changes. Sometimes you have bad week or a bad season, or you put the resolution on the back burner for whatever reason that may be. When the time is right, pick it back up, make new plans, maybe readjust, you know, what you'd said was a marathon by the end of the year. You're halfway through the year and you think, well, you know, I haven't quite gotten there. I don't think it's realistic. What about half marathon? What about something that you think is attainable for the time that you have? The future is new, right? So give yourself the grace to revise your goals, your timelines. That's important.
Yeah, absolutely. There are a lot of good points you just raised there. And Danielle, earlier when we were talking about nutrition, you mentioned to avoid certain languages or even people as they could be a trigger. And you want to make sure that you approach your resolution in a positive way. And so what a lot of people do is they look online to see how they can achieve goal A through C or D. And there's a lot of information out there that's correct, and there's a lot of information out there that maybe not so much. So how does misinformation play a role in addressing your New Year's resolution? And I guess the follow-up to that would be, where could we go to find that credible information that's backed by research?
Yeah, for sure. So there really are so many things to look out for with health-related messaging and misinformation. So some things to look for include the use of buzzwords that lack really a clear definition. So words like toxins, cleansing, immunity, clean eating, chemicals versus natural. Often we hear these words being used to describe wellness when in reality, this type of messaging is often vague and oversimplified and can be challenging to actually link back to scientific research. This can lead to inaccuracy, misunderstanding, and sometimes even unreasonable fears for people. We can also ask ourselves some questions to really help identify if the information we're looking at is valid. So are they trying to sell you something? Is the research they cite misleading? Is the research done on humans, or maybe is it done on animals and not ever replicated in humans? Are the claims they're making based on one or two research studies that are not supported by kind of what most of the research is saying? Were the studies peer reviewed? Is it an actual study, or maybe is it just a hypothesis or even an opinion piece? Does the study's conclusion support the message being shared? Are they offering quick fixes or miracle cures? And finally, are the author's credentials appropriate for the type of information that they're providing? So for example, with nutrition information, what are the person's credentials? Are they a registered dietitian? These are all things to consider when we're trying to identify misinformation. And for more, for where people can find credible information, for nutrition-related information, unlockfood.ca is a great resource for really all things nutrition. As I mentioned earlier, you can always check with a person's credentials, check if they're a dietitian for nutrition-related information. And then to find out more about becoming a dietitian, what dietitians do, or to find a dietitian in your area, visit Dietitians of Canada at dietitians.ca. For physical activity related information, the Participaction website, which is participaction.com, is a really great resource. And for misinformation and debunking misinformation, scienceupfirst.com is a very helpful resource.
Well, we are just about out of time. I really appreciate you both joining me today to talk New Year's resolution. I know I want to start running again because I felt so much better when I was running last year. So I will take some of the tips provided in our conversation today and apply them to my own life. So thank you, Dr. Lee, and thank you, Danielle.
Yeah, pleasure to be here.
Well, that'll do it for today's edition of In Focus. I'm Grant Demme. Thank you so much for listening. We're back tomorrow.